Penguin Random House Audio presents Bull Moon Rising by Ruby Dixon. Read for you by Felicity Monroe and Hero Diaz. For my husband, just cause. Content warning. Although this book takes place in a fantasy setting, it deals with emotionally difficult topics, including claustrophobia, cave-ins, spiders, corpses, rats, grave robbing, parental neglect, financial insecurity, gambling addiction, alcoholism, unprotected sex, and rampant misogyny. Any readers who believe that such content may upset them or trigger traumatic memories are encouraged to consider their emotional well-being when deciding whether to read this book. Ruby Dixon. 1. Azbeth, 27 days before the Conquest Moon. The coach taking us to Vast Warren City is creaky, the seating is uncomfortable, and I paid far too much for the ride. But it's also very obviously an artifact, which is why I wanted to take it. The exterior looks the same as every other coach that was waiting on the street in front of the inn, but this one had no horse harnessed to the front, nor a yoke for it. Instead, there was a symbol carved into the wood that I recognized as Old Prellian. The coachman charged a pretty penny, but I didn't care. I wanted to ride in that damned artifact coach. And now, here we are, and it's a dreadful, bouncy ride. I can't help but eye the coach covetously anyhow. It speeds along the cobbled roads without a horse to draw it, heading for the city in the distance. The driver is a cheerful sort, too, and seated inside with us instead of riding on a bench atop the coach. He faces the windows and holds reins as if he's steering a horse, yet there's nothing pulling us along. More symbols and Old Prellian crawl over the front of the coach, and I'm absolutely dying to lean forward and read them. But I'd have to shove my face into his lap to do so, because my vision is so dreadful. I have to content myself with the knowledge that the coach is indeed magical, and the merrily chatting coachman won't sell it. No one sells an artifact. Well, no one except my foolish father. I bite my cuticles, squinting out the window as the magic coach barrels past a field with a great deal of people standing in it. They dig at the dirt with shovels, and it looks as if there's a booth at the far end of the muddy land. A sign next to the booth reads in bright, colorful letters, "Dig for artifacts. You find, you keep." "Does that work?" I blurt out to our driver as we pass by. "Does anyone truly find an artifact in the fields?" The driver chuckles.
"Oh, no, that's purely for the tourists. Everyone shows up with a few pennies and their spades, ready to turn their luck around. They all think they'll find the next automaton or pitcher of endless wine. No one does, but they leave at the end of the day happy. I heard some of the more unscrupulous sorts take broken artifacts and bury them in the field so people can find something."
He shakes his head.
"You're better off avoiding that sort of thing."
"But your coach is an artifact," I point out, ignoring the stomp of Gwenna's foot on mine. "How did you acquire it?" He reaches out and pats the coach like it's a person. It might as well be. Any working artifact is more prized than gold.
"A gift to an ancestor from the king. It's been in the family for generations. I'm lucky to have her."
"It's quite rare," I agree. "No one's tried to steal it from you." This time, Gwenna pinches me.
"It'd be useless if they did,"
he tells me cheerfully, oblivious to my line of thought.
"It dies at sunset, and there's a magic word to make it activate at sunrise. That word is a carefully guarded secret in my family, and we wouldn't share it even upon pain of death."
I think perhaps this man just hasn't been pressed enough yet. Surely someone could coax a magic word out of him with the right sort of convincing. Then I'm disgusted at my own thoughts, because I'm imagining someone torturing a coach driver who's been quite lovely, honestly, over his artifact. It's just that the Honori family needs artifacts dreadfully. I debate how to approach my next question in a delicate manner, and all the while Gwenna stares at me with narrowed eyes. I don't suppose you'd sell it, I ask. I'd make you a very wealthy man. I'm lying, of course. If I had two pennies to rub together, I wouldn't be fleeing Honori Hold. If I had two pennies to rub together, I would have married Barnabas Chatworth, despite the fact that he's a title hunter. As it is, I am quite, quite broke. But that doesn't mean I can't try. If I could get the driver to sell this carriage to me, it wouldn't solve my problems, but it'd be a step in the right direction. It'd be something.
Oh, I can't do that,
the coachman says, and I'm not surprised.
I inherited this girl from my father, and she'll be going to my son after me.
He caresses the front of the coach again, like a lover.
I can't sell my family out for money when the money will come in simply because of the artifact.
I understand. I still think someone could torture the word of power out of him, but I understand. He glances at the back seat of the coach, where Gwenna huddles next to me, holding my cat's carrying sack.
Some things aren't for sale.
If they were, then my problems would be solved. Or would they? Considering I have no money as well as no artifacts, I wouldn't know. Indeed.
So you ladies are heading into Vast Warren. This your first time in the city?
First time, I agree, glancing back at the dirt field as it disappears from view. I'm tempted to grab a spade and try my luck with all the others, just to see if one can truly find an artifact in all that mud. If there's even a chance, it's worth trying, isn't it? For a moment, I dream about shoveling a few spadefuls of dirt, just enough to put in a bit of effort, and then striking down upon metal. I'd pull it up and uncover a gilded, gleaming artifact. Not just any artifact, either. One with endless charges, just like the coach we're in right now. Or perhaps one of the ones that recharge in sunlight. And it'd have to be something useful, too. Nothing like the glass candle that creates an endless wisp of rose-scented smoke. Something like one of the shielding crystals that are used in the capital would be perfect. Or something that creates a sought-after item from thin air, like the decanter that pours serpent venom. An artifact of war from Old Prel, that's what Honori Hold needs. Several of them, actually. We need defense, and a way to fund our hold. And we need those artifacts to actually work. The ones currently filling our vault are all dead. A dead artifact is as useless as, well, as a holder heiress with no funds and no artifacts to defend her family's holdings. I bite back a sigh and lean my head against the window of the coach, watching as another family hurries toward the field with buckets and spades in tow, chattering excitedly. Gwenna nudges me, and I realize the coach driver was talking to me. Hmm? I inquire, straightening.
You didn't say who you are and why you're heading to Vast Warren City. Attending a party of some kind?
The way he says it sounds hesitant, as if he doesn't understand why anyone would host a party in Vast Warren. The king avoids the place because it's said to be rough and tumble. That makes me a little nervous. When I envision rough and tumble, I think of some of my father's stable boys and how they get loud after they've had a few drinks. But that's only a few stable boys. I cannot imagine an entire city of that. Leaning forward, I peer out the windows of the coach to the city in the distance. It looks like a great big stain spread over a hill, with the smog of 1,000 chimneys polluting the air overhead. All of it looks dirty, but that doesn't mean it's unsafe, does it? I've read a heap of books about Vast Warren City, but mostly in a historical context. I know all about how this spot on the plains between two rivers was once the hub of a large ancient city called Prel, and Prel was full of magic. The gods grew angry at the people of Prel and had it swallowed up by the ground, where it was forgotten for hundreds of years. Then, 300 years ago, the Mansa Wars broke out. At the end of the conflict, magic was outlawed, and a new industry was started. Artifact retrieval. Vast Warren City was built atop the bones of old Prel. Vast Warren is truly the only city that's not under Holder rule. The rest of Mythos is divided up into great estates lorded over by Holders like my father, and all of the Holders are ruled by the king. But Vast Warren, it's a place unto itself, and the Royal Artifactual Guild holds sway over it. I don't know what the city looked like inside. I know old Prel had grand plazas with magical fountains, and the inhabitants imbued everything they used with magic, from cups to horse carts to weapons. It sparkled with energy, and the people there were rich and glorious. But the dirty stain on the horizon tells me that Vast Warren City is an entirely different sort of place, and so are its people. The coach driver wants to know if we're attending a party, but he's just making conversation. Everyone knows that the nobility avoid Vast Warren and its hardscrabble rough people. We stick to our isolated holds and to court. But the driver doesn't know I'm noble, and he wants an answer. Might as well give him the truth. The new truth. My name is Sparrow, I tell him, and just saying the name fills me with pride. I straighten, squaring my shoulders. And I'm heading to the city to join the Royal Artifactual Guild. I expect him to make the appropriate awed noises that such a pronouncement deserves. Guild artificers are exciting, dangerous individuals, the ones stories are written about. They're respected everywhere they go, and every holder employs the best artificer teams to hunt for them. Everyone reveres an artificer. Not our coach driver. Instead, he looks back at the two of us again and bursts into laughter. Rude. Once we're deposited onto the outskirts of Vast Warren City with our baggage, Gwenna glares at me with anger before I can even take a good look at our surroundings. She pinches my arm, scowling the moment the coach lumbers away. You absolute fibber! Why did you tell that man your name was Sparrow? Squeaker howls for attention in her carrier, the sound loud enough to make people pause in the busy street. I open the specialized satchel and heft the large orange cat into my arms. It's like hugging a sack of flour that sheds. But my pet is mollified once she's held in my arms like a baby. I run my fingers over her white chest fur while she purrs. Poor sweetheart. It's been a terrible ride from home. Bad enough that I had to spend the last 3 days in various coaches bouncing across the countryside. My poor Squeaker had to spend them in a bag. I couldn't leave her behind, though. She's all I've got. Well, her and Gwenna. I frown at my maid. I'm not a fibber. I told you before, everyone who joins the Royal Artifactual Guild takes on a bird name. It's to honor the first artificer, who was turned into a swan by a cursed artifact. Everyone in the guild is a bird, and the applicants are called fledglings. I've decided that I like the name Sparrow. I pause and then add, I know this isn't your dream. It's not too late for you to go home. We can say you were kidnapped. Better yet, I can write you a lovely letter of recommendation that would get you hired at any hold. Just say the word. Gwenna gives me a narrow-eyed stare. Why are you chasing me off? I resist the urge to raise my fingers to my mouth so I can bite my cuticles. Grandmama thinks it's a disgusting habit, and it is, but I can't help myself. When I get anxious, I nip away. I scratch at them with my thumbnail instead. I appreciate your companionship, Gwenna. Truly, I do. But this place isn't for proper ladies, and I don't want you to feel trapped into a fate not of your choosing. She stares ahead at the bustling street in front of us. People of all kinds crowd the cobblestone ways, and all of them look like they come from the rougher parts of the city. Then again, perhaps all of Vast Warren is rough. Do you remember when I was 9 and you were 14? We were girls, and my mother had just been hired into your father's kitchens. We played in the garden together before your tutor came and found us. Remember what you said to him? Gwenna asks. I squint at her, because I don't recall this day at all. Most of my days as a child were spent sitting alone in Honori Hold with a tutor, because father would be away at court. Sometimes it would be a mathematics tutor, sometimes an etiquette tutor. The best tutor was the one who encouraged my interests in old Prel, and the worst was the one hired by Grandmama, who wanted me to sew and work on my laugh so I could catch a husband. I'm sorry, I don't recall. What did I say? She looks at the buildings around us, holding a hand to her eyes to shield them from the late-day sunlight. You asked if I could take lessons with you, that you wanted a friend at your side, and you liked me. I smile softly, because I still don't remember, but it sounds like something I would have done. I was so lonely as a child that I was desperate for any sort of attention. I don't recall. Did we take lessons together then? No. Her voice goes flat. Your tutor said that I was a servant and there was no point in educating someone destined for a kitchen, that educating me would be a waste. Her jaw hardens and she meets my eyes. I remember that, and I remember the next day that a position was found for me in the scullery, and I had no choice but to say yes because my mother needed the coin. I think about that all the time. My mouth goes dry. I'm sorry, Gwenna. I'm not. His words made me angry. She sets her shoulders back. It made me realize I wanted more than just a job. I want to learn. I want to be something, someone. And I'm going to make my own path if it mucking kills me. Her determined words send a thrill down my spine. I love that. I'm so happy you're here. She reaches for my hand and gives it a squeeze, and I hug her. Or at least I try to hug her. But I'm juggling Squeaker, and she's got our bags, and it all turns into a mess. She pulls away with a puzzled frown, and I pretend to pick lint off her sleeve instead. It's a shame, though. I do so love a good hug, and they're so very rare. No one likes to hug a holder's daughter. It's settled, then. I shall be Sparrow, and you shall be Chickadee. By Hanai's tits, I will, Gwenna declares indignant. That's a terrible name. Then you choose, I shrug. We're assuming new identities starting today. I can't very well go around declaring myself as Lady Aspeth Honori, heiress to Honori Hold. That's just asking to get kidnapped and held for ransom. And my father can't pay the ransom. At all. He can't even pay for his knights. I can only imagine the chaos that would ensue if our neighboring holds knew just how stretched thin Honori Hold truly is. A hold is considered only as strong as the land it protects, and Honori is the oldest holder family. We're thought to be strong with artifacts. Undefeatable. If the truth came out, my family's hold would be overtaken by our enemies, our lands annexed to theirs, and our entire family would be executed. And while I'm beyond frustrated with Father for gambling away our last working artifacts, the people who live on Honori lands are blameless. They don't deserve whatever terrible fate is on its way for the Hold. It's the Lord Holder's responsibility to protect their people. And since my father cannot, it falls to me. So no, I have to do this. When Father left for court to visit his mistress, the courtesan Liata, I knew I had to act. I slunk out of the Hold in the middle of the night, carrying a few bags with my possessions, and left a note to the staff explaining that I would be visiting my grandmother in the Eastern Hills. In the meantime, I'll become an artificer myself, find an absolute hoard of artifacts, and replenish the Honori holdings. Asbeth Honori was left behind on the dusty roads to Vastwarren City. Sparrow is who I am now. Gwenna rents a luggage cart with a penny, dragging it after her. We load up the cart, or rather she does while I juggle my cat. Then all of our gear is loaded, and there's no reason to wait any longer. Come along, chickadee, I say brightly. The guild recruitment meeting isn't until the morning. Shall we find lodgings? Not chickadee, Gwenna protests, her hands going to her hips. That sounds incredibly dumb. Then pick a bird. What's your favorite bird? To eat? Turkey. I don't think calling yourself turkey is a good idea, though I doubt it's taken. I purse my lips, thinking, and adjust my heavy cat in my arms. Good gods, she's shedding like a dandelion all over my dark traveling dress. I try to put Squeaker back into her satchel, but she howls with anger and digs her nails into my arm. So I sigh and heft her onto my hip like a fat orange baby. What about Blue Jay? Robin? Wren? How about I stay Gwenna for now? She gives me an irritated look and picks up the handle to the luggage cart. Guild first, bird name later. Lead the way, Lady Sparrow. Just Sparrow, I tell her brightly, and then breathe deep. It's a mistake. Vastwarren City has a peculiar smell to it. It's a smell like a compost pile, along with unwashed bodies and a variety of other undelicious stinks. There's a cloud of smog hanging over the city, no doubt due to several thousand hearths working all at once. I cough, juggling my heavy cat, and then wish I hadn't laced my corset so tight this morning. By the lady, there's a real stench to this place. Smells like I rubbed the back of my ear, Gwenna agrees. That's disgusting. I pinch my nose shut with one hand, juggling Squeaker with the other. She's not wrong, though. There's a distinct, unwashed scent to everything that I've never experienced before. Honori Hold is austere and lightly populated and, above all else, clean. Vastwarren City looked a little run down from afar, but I had resolved to withhold judgment until I stood in its streets. Now, I'm standing there, and, well, it's bad. It's crowded. That's one of the first things I notice. Gwenna wrestles with the luggage cart while people flow around us in the street, giving us dirty looks for not moving with the foot traffic. I hug Squeaker a little closer, because if she runs away, I'll never find her again in this crowd. Not that this is a problem. The only thing Squeaker runs to is her food bowl. Vastwarren City is dirty, too. There's a layer of grime in the cobbled streets, and there are potholes everywhere. The buildings, 2 and 3 stories tall, all look as if they're sagging and weather-beaten, and I don't see a single bit of greenery. Everything is gray and brown and drab and dirty and crowded. Rising above the clutter of buildings is a large wall around the heart of the city. Behind it, I see spires and tall, arching roofs. That's where the guild will be. I just have to get through the rest of Vastwarren first. I eye my surroundings with distaste. There are so many people, people of all kinds. There are the pale northerners from the mountains like myself, and the sun-kissed southerners from the coast. There are Taurians marching through the crowds, their sweeping horns threatening to take out the nearest awning if they walk too close to a building, and their hooves clop on the cobblestones. I even see a Slitherskin darting amongst the crowd, small and quick, his portable home perched on his back. I want to stare, but it doesn't seem polite. Honori Hold is high in the mountains, isolated by the landscape and our name. Honori is the oldest of holds, and we're expected to hold ourselves to a higher standard than the newer holds. We only consort with other families nearly as old, and even though I've traveled to many other holds while attending court and visiting allies, I've always been left with the women, supervised and stuck in a parlor somewhere, pretending to embroider. Most of the time I can't even bring a book, because Grandmama thinks no one will wish to marry a bookish woman, and that's why I've remained unattached for so long, despite the Honori name. Then again, Grandmama would have wanted me to marry Barnabas regardless of the fact that he was a title hunter. I would be fine with that if the title wasn't bankrupt. I'm just afraid of what would happen when he found out it is, and we've got no artifacts to boot. I once read a pamphlet that compared Vastwarren to an anthill built atop a graveyard, and now I can't unsee it. The houses perching up the slope that elevates Vastwarren City above the surrounding lands are all clustered together, sharing walls and overhanging roofs, and I get the impression that if one house were to fall, the entire city would crumble. The streets seem to wind around the city in a spiral, lined with more run-down buildings every step of the way. Everything seems to be made of wood, and patchwork remnants of other old houses. Overhead, laundry lines hang between houses on opposite sides of the street, dripping water on passers-by below. Something wet drips on my face, and I swipe at it in horror. I certainly hope that was from laundry. "Where to now?" Gwenna hisses at me, her expression expectant. "Do you need to consult your pamphlets about the guild?" "No need. I have them memorized. For years, I've gathered every book I could find on the Royal Artifactual Guild. I have the memoirs of Sparkanos the Sworn. I have 3 books written about Guild Master Magpie and her adventures, and every time the guild releases an informational pamphlet, I have one sent to me so I can pore over it. I know precisely the location of the guild headquarters. The annual meeting is tomorrow. At that time, the doors will be opened for newcomers to find a master to apprentice to. Until then, I suppose we find a nearby inn for the night and bide our time. I smile brightly at her. All according to plan. "Is it?" Gwenna asks. "Is it really? Do you have a better idea?" She thinks for a moment and then sighs heavily. "I do not. Me either. So come on." Squeaker howls at me and I adjust her on my hip once more. "Let's find ourselves a nice clean inn and tidy up." "Oh, a nice clean inn?" She grumbles at me. "Are we leaving the city then?" "Very funny." But I suspect she's correct, which is a little alarming. Vastwarren City is a dump. Still, I knew that this place would be a little sketchy. No one comes to Vastwarren for the scenery. They're here because this is where all the great risk-takers live, after all. Men daring enough to brave the deep tunnels of the ruins of the ever below, seeking out the artifacts of the ancients and fighting off thieves and monsters. Teams of artifact hunters delving the ruins of old Prel and then celebrating their discoveries in the legendary Guild Hall. Fighters forcing back hordes of rattlings. Of course the city's going to be a little frayed around the edges. Quite frayed, actually. "Hey!" Gwenna's indignant screech interrupts my thoughts. That's not yours! Turning around, I see Gwenna in a wrestling match with a strange man over one of my bags. The man snarls at my maid with a mouthful of yellowed teeth, and to my surprise, she snarls right back. He rips the case from her grip and then races away down the busy street, Gwenna chasing after him. It's like when Cook feeds the fish in the moat the scraps after dinner, I realize. Several others turn to look at the cart, adrift in the middle of the street. They're about to swarm in a feeding frenzy. Too late, I realize that the rich brocade dress I'm wearing is a terrible idea when one is trying to lie low. As another man in worn clothes surges toward the cart, I do the only thing I can think of. I fling myself on it and promptly sit on the pile. Squeaker howls with indignation as she's jostled about, but the moment my rump hits the stack of suitcases, the onlookers seem to pause. The newcomer, heading to steal another of my bags, scowls and waves me off, heading in the opposite direction. My skirts, and let's be frank, my arse, are big enough to cover the smaller bags, and I recline slightly, doing my best to cover my luggage with as much of my person as possible, and snarl fiercely at anyone who comes near. Maybe it's the sight of the enormous orange cat on my chest, or the fact that a woman is sprawling atop a mountain of luggage, but no one else tries to steal one of my bags. Gwenna returns a short time later, panting and sweaty. She puts a hand to her bodice and gasps for air. Bastard got away with it. Which bag was it? I ask, worried. If I'm here without my sensible boots. Your jewelry. Her mouth is set in an angry line. Oh, well, that's all right, I suppose. Anything valuable was sold off the moment Father started to have gambling issues, and the thieves made off with a bunch of paste jewels and fakes, nothing more. Still, a well-made fake can bring in coin, and I had been hoping to sell them when we arrived. It limits what we can use for funds. But there are worse things that could have been stolen, like my books or the outfit I've prepared for when I meet the Royal Artifactual Guild, or Squeaker's favorite kibble, because she's a rather particular cat. I managed to save the rest, I offer when she continues panting. Thank you for trying. She waves a hand in the air. Didn't realize there were that many thieves here. I didn't either. Indeed, the entire city seems as if it's full of crooks and brigands now. Every man who passes looks like a potential thief, and whenever someone sidles too near to the cart, I stiffen in alarm. Gwenna grabs the handle of the cart and groans as she gives it a tug, with me still atop the baggage. Melis's bones, Aspeth. What have you got under that dress? Rocks? Think frogs, not rocks, I joke, keeping a bright smile on my face so Gwenna doesn't panic. I know she hates this trip already. I know she's afraid of how vulnerable we are now that we've left Father's hold. I could be kidnapped by another Holder family for ransom. I could be set upon by thieves. I could be compromised in any number of ways a noblewoman is compromised. I could find myself dumped in the woods to the east and lost there forever. All of these things she's brought up multiple times during our journey here to Vast Warren City. I've considered them all. I'm not stupid. I'm just completely out of options. Gwenna's right that this place is unsavory and dangerous, but coming here is worth the risk. If anyone finds out that Honori Hold has nothing but a few dead artifacts and that my father's gambled the rest away, we'll be tossed out by rivals before a fortnight passes. And that's the best-case scenario. This is something I have to do. As another passerby eyes the cart, I scowl at him and clutch Squeaker harder. The cat is squirming dreadfully, but I keep her tightly in hand. I know I'm heavier than Gwenna. My upbringing as a Holder's daughter has been full of sweets and books and very little physical work, and it shows in the size of my derriere. If you want to sit while I pull, we can switch. Don't be ridiculous, Gwenna says, jerking on the handle of the cart. You're the lady and I'm the maid. That makes me frown, because I've left the hold. I'm no longer a lady. I'm supposed to be Sparrow, and she's supposed to be my equal and friend, Wren. We've discussed this. But the middle of a crowded street is not the time to argue, so I just hold my squirming cat harder. Let's find an inn and get settled, shall we? We fight our way down two more streets, or rather Gwenna does, before we come to an inn. There's a wooden sign hanging over the entrance, with a mug of beer and a bed on the shingle. The smell of hot food wafts out the open door, along with laughter. Gwenna points at it, raising her eyebrows, and I nod. The moment we're over the threshold and out of the street, I leap off the cart, hand Squeaker to Gwenna, and then approach the bar. One room, please. I beam my most winning smile at the woman barkeep, who wipes the wood down with a rag that could quite possibly be filthier than the bar itself. She pauses, eyeing Gwenna with my luggage. For a lady and her maid? For two friends, I say brightly. We are bosom companions. She blinks at me, then at Gwenna, and shrugs. Whatever. Price is the same. Costs extra for the animal, though. The innkeeper assures me that food will be sent up later, along with a basin of water for washing. She doesn't ask our names, but I offer that mine is Sparrow, which earns another bark of laughter. I'm starting to grow offended at how many people think that it's funny. Is Sparrow a common name for guild artificers? I should think Raven or Peregrine or even Hawk would be far more usual. But then we're settled on the first floor, thank the five gods, and we've eaten. There's even some cooked chicken in a bowl for Squeaker, who makes greedy noises as she eats, as if we've been starving her in a cruel and unjust manner. We sit on the edge of the bed, and bowls in hand, eat our meal. I nibble on a small bite of stew, too exhausted to eat much. This is the first time I've traveled so far from home, and after days of anxiety and worry, we're finally here. I feel like collapsing into a heap, but I know the real work has only just begun. Tomorrow, I must introduce myself to the Royal Artifactual Guild as a student of the arts and see where they assign me for schooling. Imagine, schooling, and me at the ripe old spinster age of 30. Briefly, I think of Barnabas and his perfect red hair and gorgeous smile, and my heart hurts. But only briefly. It's an improvement. He doesn't deserve any of my thoughts. So, Gwenna says at my side. Yes? Am I sleeping on the floor? I put my spoon down in my bowl and give my head a shake, focusing on her. Gwenna has been at my side for 3 days now, traveling through the Holder lands by night, taking coach after jostling coach through the mountains and back through the forests again, all without complaint. Well, no more complaint than usual. I'm grateful for her presence. She's slightly younger than me, 25 years to my 30, and I like that she's bold about telling me what she thinks. She's been my maid ever since she was 12, and I think of her as a friend. Come to think of it, she might be my only friend. It makes the fact that she's here with me that much more meaningful. You'll sleep in the bed, of course. We're in this together, and I'm determined that we consider ourselves equals, Gwenna. You're the only one I can trust, and it means everything to me that you're at my side. I know Vast Warren City isn't a dream of yours. She snorts, then takes a heaping bite of her stew. But I appreciate that you're here just the same. I'm here because you needed someone at your side, Gwenna grumbles. She stirs her food briskly with her utensil, staring at it and not at me. And I can't very well be a lady's maid if there's no lady to serve, right? You know, I'd write you a very effusive letter of recommendation, I say gently. Being in the Royal Artifactual Guild isn't for everyone. I know it's dirty, difficult work, and guild members spend much of their time in tunnels, digging through the dirt. I'm told that the training is difficult and long, and many don't make it through to the two-part test. I'll understand if you wish to leave. I'm sure I can sell something, and you can take a coach back to Honori Hold. I bet we could find that nice man with the artifact coach, too. His wasn't too bad. I'm staying, Gwenna says, a stubborn look on her round face. Gwenna might be the only person more obstinate than I am, and I adore her for it. But don't call me Chickadee. It sounds ridiculous, and, she flaps a hand, too fussy, too dainty. Fussy and dainty suit neither of us. I'm tall and broad, with thick legs, and a waistline that shows my enduring love for nibbles. I bite my cuticles, and read books, and wear spectacles. I'm not pretty. I'm bland. Gwenna is pretty, though. She's got a round, sweet face and thick black hair. She comes up to my shoulder, on the short side of things, but she's stout and strong and busty, and could never be mistaken for a delicate creature. I like the name Sparrow because it suits me to blend in. A sparrow is a creature that strikes me as unfussed by the need for flashy feathers or intricate birdsong. A sparrow just does its job. That appeals to me. Not Chickadee, then, I offer, though Gwenna really does look like a cute plump chickadee to me. Even her no-nonsense bun of black hair looks like a chickadee's cap. You decide on a name. Did you like the idea of being called Wren? Humph. Only wrens I know of nest in the hayloft and shit all over the barn. Well, then, it's the perfect name, I say brightly. I come up with plans, and you shit all over them. We blink at each other, Gwenna staring at me in surprise. Then we both burst into laughter. Wren will do, Gwenna tells me, chuckling. I won't remember it, just like I won't remember to call you Sparrow, but it'll do. I grin at her and take another bite of my food, glad that whatever route this journey of mine will take, I'll have a friend at my side. It isn't until much, much later, as I'm lying in bed and staring up at the ceiling, as Gwenna snores next to me, that I think of my father. Has he returned from court yet? Or is he still in his mistress's bed? When he returns, will he even notice that I'm gone? That I haven't come down to dinner for many nights in a row? Will he inquire with the staff about my absence? No, probably not. The thought's a depressing one. I told everyone that I was visiting Grandmama at her cell in Hills Manor, which will work until Grandmama sends one of her letters wanting to know why I haven't married yet and enumerating all the ways I've grown up into an unmarriageable spinster instead of the in-demand heiress I should be. She sends those sorts of letters about once a fortnight. Grandmama is nothing if not determined. And once one arrives, they'll realize I'm gone. But I figure it'll take a while, and by the time my disappearance is noted, I'll be enrolled as a guild fledgling and safe in Vastwarren City. I picture the scene. Father will return home from court after being away for months. He'll brush past the staff like he always does, ignore the scrolls and letters full of notices from debt collectors. Instead, he'll retreat to his study for a drink and to relax. He'll go out riding for a few days, visit his tailor, get new clothes, and at some point decide that he should check in on his heir. He'll invite me to dinner in the main hall, and it's always more of a demand than an invitation, and then sit as far away from me as possible at the long trestle table that spans the length of the enormous hall. At some point, he'll realize I'm not sitting opposite him. Then, and only then, he'll realize I'm not in the hold, that I'm not waiting around for him to notice that I exist. It would have been nice for someone to care that I'm gone, I think wistfully. After all, I'm the heir to Honori Hold. No one knows that we're broke and artifact-less except myself and father and a few of our most trusted servants. A holder's daughter should be important. Shouldn't someone care? Anyone? At all? Squeaker makes a loud mrowl near my ear and paws at the blanket. Obediently, I lift it up, and she shoves her way under, curling up against my side. At least my cat loves me. 2. Aspeth. 26 days before the conquest moon. The next morning, I read over the well-worn pamphlet yet again, just to make certain that I haven't missed anything. The Royal Artifactual Guild meets once a year on the eve of Swan's Day to say a prayer to the gods, to honor the king for his benevolence, and to update any rules of the guild itself. It's a time when artificers are officially promoted, artifacts are haggled over by holders, and those who wish to join the guild can pledge to a teacher, who will do their best to prepare their fledglings over the next year in order to take the certification test. That's where I come in. I clutch the pamphlet to my chest and take a deep breath. I'm ready. More than that, I need this. Artifacts would solve all of my family's problems. 2 or 3 greater artifacts would settle us once more and give us safety. Several lesser artifacts would staunch the bleeding and could hopefully be traded for a greater, depending on how useful they are. Truly, I'm well equipped for this job. I learned Old Prelian for amusement. I can read and speak 3 other languages in addition to the Prelian glyphs. I'm well educated and good with math. They should be salivating over my skill set. With another deep breath, I dress, casting off the last vestiges of Aspeth Honori, only child of Holder Corin Honori of the Far Reaches. Today, I truly become Sparrow, applicant and fledgling to the Royal Artifactual Guild and General Nobody. I pull on my underclothes, petticoats and corset, cinching it up the front. Brown stockings go over my sensible boots. Over my head, I toss my least extravagant dress. It's made of a thick, sturdy brocade in a dull pattern, the skirts swishing at my ankles. Ties have been added to the skirts so they can be hiked up at the front for ease of walking or hiking or tunneling, since Sparrow will be expected to venture into the dark and mysterious tunnels of the ever below. The bodice attached to this one is decorated with brown ribbon at the edges, all to convey a subtlety to my clothing. I lace myself up, the bodice bound at the front so I can dress myself, instead of having a lady's maid do so. Gwenna watches all of this from the bed, petting Squeaker's round head as she does. You want help with that? Sparrow dresses herself, I say determined. She rolls her eyes at me. You're taking this too seriously. They're going to take one look at you and know you for a lady. They won't. I'm dressed like one of the common folk. I finish lacing my bodice and gaze down at myself, pleased. The sleeves are heavy and undecorated, with a button at the wrist, and I do them up, admiring the very drab poof of fabric. Not even a bit of embroidery to liven things up. Look at me. I'm wearing so much brown I can't possibly help but look common. No common woman owns a gown in brocade, no matter the color. She swings her feet on the bed. You want to swap clothing? I consider it. But Gwenna, Wren, I must remember, Wren, is far shorter than I am. Her skirts would be practically indecent, and she's got more in the bust than I do. I shall be fine. Are you wearing your spectacles today? You haven't put them on. Absolutely not. Spectacles are a rich woman's accoutrement. I can't have them thinking that I don't need to join. Can't have that, Gwenna drawls. Bad enough that you've got titties. Hush. I gaze down at said titties, and they look rather prominent, thanks to the bodice I wear that's designed for exactly such an effect. That won't do. I unlace the top and do a bit of strategic tucking so I seem flatter, and then relace with a bit of give. There, better. And it's raining, so I shall take my umbrella. She eyes me, and then looks down at her own plain clothing, then shrugs. So, what do I need to know about the guild? What do you mean? Gwenna purses her lips. Like, am I supposed to know what they do other than tomb robbing? Who was the first tomb robber? How'd they manage a whole guild about tomb robbing? I sputter at her words. Tomb robbing? It's not tomb robbing. It's artifact retrieval. From tombs. She puts up a hand when I protest again. I'm not judging. I'm just asking what I need to know so I can blend in and make it look like it's my lifelong dream to join the guild. I want to protest more, because it's not about tomb robbing. True, some artifacts are found buried with people, but the reason behind the artifact retrievals is a noble one. Each one will be used to carefully further the power of the holders, enabling them to protect people and the lands. What do you want to know? How did it get started? The whole guild thing. It's because of the Mancer Wars, right? Nervous, I wonder how much I can sum up for her that she'll remember. There are 300 years of storied and glorious royal artifactual guild history, but I suppose she just needs the basics. The Mancer Wars had shown everyone that personal magic, be it as a pyromancer, geomancer, or even necromancer, was unstable and corrupted the person using it. Because of the Mancer Wars, the king outlawed personal magic and established the holds amongst his lords. You know that part, yes? She nods. And it was all 300 years ago? Is that when Prell fell? I shake my head. Old Prell was destroyed over 1,000 years ago, long before the Mancer Wars. But after the Mancer Wars, without magic, people didn't know how to protect their holds. Wars broke out constantly, and the lords of the holds were unhappy because they felt they didn't have enough power to hold on to their lands. A man called Spakanos was interested in ancient history, and he traveled to the ruins of Old Prell. 300 years ago, it was simply a cattle pasture. He dug into the earth and pulled up an orb with a word of power on it and brought it to the king. The nobles all wanted orbs of their own, and the ruins were overrun with thieves and vandals. Spakanos and the king knew the flow of artifacts had to be controlled so it could be kept amongst the nobility. They walled off the caverns that led to the ever below and declared it owned by the Royal Artifactual Guild, and if anyone wished to hunt for artifacts to sell, they would have to join the guild. Understand? I thought you were going to give me the shortened version. She winks at me. That's a lot to remember. It's because that is the shorter version. I'm skipping 300 years of politics, guild maneuvering, discoveries, and holder power grabs. All you need to know is that Old Prell went boom nearly 1,000 years before the guild was created. All right? Old Prell. Really old. She lifts one finger and then another as she counts. Guild came much later. Wait. When was Vast Warren built? The city itself grew around the walled-off section of the ever below controlled by the guild. So the guild was here first, and Vast Warren came second. Oh, sure. Her expression tells me I'll probably have to go over it all again. But I've studied Old Prell and Vast Warren for years. I can't expect everyone else to know as much as me. She scratches at Squeaker's chin and glances up at me. So, when are we leaving? You should stay here. What? Why? I thought we were joining together. We are. Biting at my thumb's cuticle, I consider the situation. I would love for Gwenna to come with me, all told. I'm terrified. But if we leave our luggage and poor Squeaker unattended here at the inn, I suspect I'll never see either again. They're all I've got left, because if my father finds out I've run away, I'll be privately disowned. He won't make it public until he's got another heir lined up, and I'm hoping that I'll have my guild certification by then, and hopefully an artifact or two to bring to my family to restore our glory. If not... With a lump of emotion in my throat, I grab Squeaker and haul her into my arms. Gwenna doesn't like to be hugged, so I lavish kisses on the cat, letting her lick my nose raw as I snuggle her. I won't take long, I promise. I need you to stay with Squeaker and guard our things. I'll find a teacher for both of us and return to collect you. Give the woman downstairs a penny and see if she doesn't have scraps of meat for the cat. I kiss the cat a dozen times until she's squirming against my chest and I can't put off leaving any longer. Then I set her down and try to hug Gwenna, since I've decided that I'm now a hugger. She waves me off, though. I might be a hugger now, but Gwenna is firmly not. With my umbrella in hand, I head out of the inn and into the nasty streets of Vastwarren City. Today it's no longer as foul-smelling, at least. The weather is washing the scent away. Unfortunately for me, it's creating quite a slog of mud, and even the raised cobbles in the center of the streets for walking upon are slick and filthy. My skirts, swishing at my heels, are still getting soaked and slapping against my stockings. I let this annoyance go on for one street, then another, and then I give up and duck into a dark alley and fasten the loops that hike my skirts up for tunneling. They now bunch up at my knees, and I look a right fool. But I can walk with purpose. With my umbrella over my head again, I stride back out into the street and squint at my surroundings. I need to find the main guild hall of the Royal Artifactual Guild, as that's where all of the artificer meetings are held. It's just going to be damned difficult without my spectacles. I'm nervous as I head through the crowded, filthy city on my own. It's not that anyone is threatening me. It's just that this is the first time in my life I've ever gone anywhere unaccompanied. I keep expecting to look over to a chaperone on my left, or a maid, or a guard. It's strange to walk alone. I feel exposed. Vulnerable, and oddly lonely. And damp, very, very damp. The drizzle of rain is never ending as I walk through Vastwarren, as if the gods themselves are spitting on my dreams. The huddled buildings lining each street are so strange compared to Honori's tall stone walls and elegant architecture. Back home, there are not many windows in the hold, as it was originally built for defense, but over time my relatives have sought to beautify the place. If the room has no natural light, gorgeous artistic metal chandeliers hang from the ceiling. Rich tapestries and paintings adorn otherwise plain walls. Lush carpets ensure the stone floors are warm and inviting, and everything has a look of elegance. Here, everything is haphazard, as if it were slapped together overnight. The buildings sag against one another, and I'm pretty certain a few of them are made entirely of cast-off wood. There are no tile roofs here. Houses and shops are covered with battered tin or equally battered wood. The impression is not of functionality, but of good enough, and everything looks temporary. Or at least it does until you get to the heart of the city. All roads in Vastwarren lead to the guild, because the city was built up around the guild holdings. The guild's thick stone wall is visible from a distance, making it easy to find. I just have to continue up to the top of the anthill, so to speak, and head for that wall. Unlike the rest of the city, it's impressive in its make, and taller than the tallest inn. As I approach, I can't help but think it reminds me of my family's holding, with enormous, forbidding walls to protect the treasure inside. By the time I find the entrance to the walled-off part of town that belongs to the guild, I'm soaked. Once I pass through the impressive gates, I'm lost in an entirely new maze of barracks and halls and libraries. When I find the large, ostensibly grey building that must surely, surely be the main guild hall, my clothes are heavy and dripping with water, and I've wandered over half a vast warren itself. I'm probably carrying all the mud in my boots, too. I'm in a dreadful mood by the time I see the statue of Sparkanos the Swan, the first artificer. Triumph surges in me again, and I tilt my umbrella back, ignoring the fat drops of rain that spatter on my clothes as I regard him. Sparkanos' statue wears a long cloak, the fabric swirling out behind him as he clutches the sphere of reason under one arm, a sword in the other. At the hem of his cloak, it looks as if the fabric is turning into feathers, a nod to his curse. It's a powerful-looking statue, and one I've read about and seen drawings of in books. But this is the first time I've seen such a wonder in person. I'm utterly breathless at the sight. To think that could be me someday, with a powerful artifact tucked under my arm, paving the way for others to bring our world out of darkness and back to the enlightenment of the ancients. My mood lightens, and I'm smiling as I race toward the long climb of stone steps that leads to the hall itself. It seems as if the entire city is here. There's a crowd on the steps despite the driving rain, and when I push my way forward with a few muttered apologies, I'm not surprised to see that the doors to the hall are wide open, and even more people are crowded inside. The hall looks exactly as I pictured it. Light streams in from outside through great windows strategically placed to highlight statues of the guild's most famous artificers. The room itself is 3 stories tall and longer than it is wide. High above, there are stuffed birds lining the walls, reminders that the guild chooses their namesakes. There's a long nave, much like in an old church, with a sodden brown carpet down the center of the room. People are squeezed in, and far ahead, at the front of the hall, I can see a banner and a dais. The crowd is obnoxious, jostling to get inside the hall. A man nearby elbows me, knocking me into my neighbor, who promptly palms my backside. I let out a squeal of outrage, but when I snap my umbrella shut to strike my attacker, I can't tell who it is. There are several men smirking at me, dressed in fine coats and wearing hats, rain dripping off them. An uneasy feeling starts in the pit of my gut, and I wonder if I should have brought Gwenna after all. Now that I'm looking around, I don't see any other women. In fact, I might be the only woman here. That is very interesting, in a very alarming sort of way. I draw myself up, my jaw clenched, and decide the only way to handle this is to be aggressive. I swat at men with my closed umbrella. "Step aside, I need to enter," I declare in a loud voice. "Move it! Coming through!" There are a few grumbles, but the crowd continues to part, letting me in. I make it to the doors, and to my surprise, I'm standing behind one of the large horned Taurians. There's another thing I never see at my father's hold, the strange bull-headed people from the plains. Well, of course there are a few Taurians who are artificers. It makes sense, doesn't it? If a human can be an artificer, why not a Taurian? I decide to treat them like everyone else and give the man in front of me a smack on his thick arm with my umbrella handle. "Let me through!" He growls low and angry in his throat, turning to glare at me, and the swivel of his horned head is so great that I let out a very undignified squeak and retreat, losing my balance. I stagger, arms flailing, only to be caught around the waist and saved by strong arms and the irritated, strange expression of another Taurian, this one with golden eyes.
3. Hawk. My skin practically itches as more and more humans crowd into the main guild hall. It's recruitment day, so it shouldn't be surprising. Today's the day we try to find enough students to make a five, a trained team for exploring the ruins. Only half of the people who are here will actually apply. But it feels like everyone in Vast Warren shows up to gawk at the normally closed-off guild buildings. It's like this every time, but this year it's particularly irksome because of the way the calendar falls. I hate the Conquest Moon, Raptor says at my side, his tail thrashing almost as wildly as mine. Makes me want to come out of my skin or rip someone out of theirs. I snort with amusement because I know just what he means. Humans are blissfully unaware of such things, but Taurians are sensitive to the god Old Garish, and the Conquest Moon is meaningful for every person with a drop of Minotaur blood in their veins. Once every 5 years, the Blood Moon crosses over the White Moon, just as Old Garish took to wife the Queen of Old Prel. It's called the Conquest Moon amongst the Taurians, because the god conquered the Queen's army and then kept her in his bed for 5 days. When she arose, she was pregnant with 5 sons. And until the Conquest Moon passes, every Taurian is going to be agitated and on edge, or leaving the city entirely.